Hello, welcome to Out in the Bay, queer radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen, with Sacramento on my mind. This week, an update on state politics with Bay Area reporter, assistant editor, and political columnist Matthew S. Pacheco. Lines are being drawn for the once-a-decade mapping of state assembly, state senate, and U.S. congressional districts based on the prior year's census. This time around, there's more LGBTQ representation on the panel that draws those district lines than 10 years ago. It's important because without that representation, there's a risk that heavily queer districts could be split, lessening the likelihood of LGBTQ politicians being elected to represent us in Sacramento and Washington. Matthew's article in this week's Bay Area Reporter dives into the details, and he's here with me now to explain it to us directly and give us some of the nuances. We'll also take a look at the effort to recall Governor Gavin Newsom and what implications that could have for LGBTQ Californians. Matthew S. Pacheco has been covering politics and other news for the Bay Area Reporter, the region's largest LGBTQ-focused newspaper and online news service, for coming up on 20 years. He or another BAR journalist joins us once a month to fill us in on news stories especially affecting queer communities. Matthew S. Pacheco, thanks for coming back to join us here on Out in the Bay.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show again.
Yeah, so first, Matthew, please tell us about the Citizens Redistricting Commission. What does it do and what's so important about its work?
So here in California, the concerns around gerrymandering of congressional districts and also state assembly and Senate seats led to the state deciding to take that decennial process out of the hands of lawmakers and into actual citizens of California. So in 2010 was the first time that we saw the Citizen Redistricting Commission get to work. And there were some issues around it, as I reported on at the time, in ensuring that LGBTQ neighborhoods and communities throughout the state were kept whole in as many of the districts as possible. And in San Francisco, there was concerns because initially the way that the two assembly seats in the city were drawn, it would have changed and carved out some LGBTQ neighborhoods and put them into a different assembly district. People, when they saw and realized this, they raised concerns and the maps got changed. And I think, you know, that lesson has actually been carried over for 10 years because now the commission from the get-go, as we report this week, is looking at not making that mistake again. And as they draw the maps later this year, are going to take LGBTQ neighborhoods under consideration as what's known as communities of interest. In the past, communities of interest had included ethnic and racial minority groups so that Black neighborhoods, Asian American neighborhoods, Native American tribes were not split and therefore diluting their ability to elect people from their own community to represent them. And so that's the gist of why this is really important, is that we want to be able to continue to see LGBTQ people get elected to the state assembly, Senate, and Congress.
Thanks for that explanation. And let's ask another really basic question. Why does this have to be done every 10 years?
It's built into the way that our political system is created. So it's a process that was established, you know, decades ago, that every 10 years, based on the population of the whole country through the census, it's used to determine proportional representation in these districts. So your state, your city's population will determine how many, you know, seats in Congress you have, how many seats in the state legislature you had. So at one time, San Francisco, we had two assembly people and we had two state senators representing us. Today, because of changes in the population here in California, San Francisco now only has one state senator and two assembly people. We're expecting to see California, we right now have 53 seats in the House out in D.C. Because of out-migration, a drop-off in births here in the state, and 4 years of the Trump administration blocking immigration, California has lost population since the last census. So we could lose maybe one, maybe even two House seats. The likelihood is that that will impact how the House districts are drawn in Southern California, because there's more wiggle room down there to kind of draw the maps. But it's going to mean that, you know, at least one or two current House members will see their district be wiped out and erased from the map.
Do they get to serve out the rest of their term?
Yeah.
And then they're gone? Or they don't have to leave midterm, do they?
They'll have to run in whatever new district they end up in. And they could have to run against one of their, you know, Republican or Democratic colleagues in the House in the primary in 2022.
Okay, thank you. So, as I understand it, the Statewide Citizens Commission for Redistricting is made up of 14 members total and has at least two openly LGBTQ members this year, whereas in 2011 it had only one. Also, there's more data now from the U.S. Census on LGBTQ demographics. So, how do those two things make a difference?
Well, it helps to have more voices at the table, as we're always arguing. If you're not at the table when these discussions are happening, then your voice isn't heard and the interests of your community isn't heard. And also, because I think of the work that was established 10 years ago, the second commission this year, they have a template that they can follow, and they've actually been able to get to work a lot faster. So before they even start drawing any lines, they're now talking to different communities right now. They've launched a website where you can draw and submit your own map. So if you are concerned about, you know, making sure your community stays intact, you can send them suggestions on how you'd like to see the maps for the districts in your area drawn. And because of the changes that were done on the census forms itself, where people who are same-sex couples could very clearly indicate that on the forms, there's going to be a lot better data to know where are same-sex households living. So that helps them, if we are a community of interest, to have better data on the LGBT community, so they know that when they go to draw the maps, here's where the concentration of same-sex households are. Let's try to make sure they stay together in one district and not split into two or three.
Your article mentions in it the possibility, and I don't know if this is just a total hypothetical, but of the Castro being split right down the middle on Castro Street. Was that ever an actual threat or risk, or is that a purely hypothetical illustration?
Well, I think it was a serious concern definitely 10 years ago, because it is very easy sometimes to just look at major roadways in cities and be like, we're going to draw the line down the middle of the street. Because right now in San Francisco, for instance, that's what happens on Valencia Street. So Valencia, for the county supervisor seats, it's right down the middle. So you have one supervisor who covers one side of Valencia Street, and the other side is represented by somebody else.
Wow.
Is it going to happen this time with the Castro? I highly doubt it. One of the commissioners from our community said that won't fly with this commission because, like I said, I mean, they are aware of the importance of this as they start their work. So it's not like 10 years ago where they weren't thinking about this and they had to, you know, they were 6 months into the process when people started to raise objections and they had to redraw the maps. Well, this year it's flipped where they're going out and talking to communities, getting input before they even start to draw any of the new boundaries. And in fact, you know, the delays in the census last year because of COVID, I think have helped them in this, because the Census Bureau itself had to postpone the completion of the census into the fall last year. They still haven't even delivered the data. And here in California, the way that the process works is that once the census gets the data on the state's population to the Secretary of State's office and to this redistricting commission, there's a whole nother entity out of UC Berkeley that then has to take the prison population and plug that into these various districts. So,
and just to be clear, this Citizens Commission will actually draw the maps. This is not just an advisory panel. They will draw the final
right.
maps.
Right. They have the final say, and they are working towards a deadline to get the new maps to the Secretary of State so that people have plenty of time ahead of, you know, we have an election. I know it may seem far away, but people will be running for all of the House seats in June of 2022 in the primary, and all of the assembly seats here in California will be up in about, I don't know off the top of my head on the Senate seats, but a number of state Senate seats will also be up on next year's ballot. And so people need to know what district they live
in. District they're representing.
In order to decide to run, right.
Okay, now you mentioned the Secretary of State, James Schwab. Is he still acting Secretary of State?
No, he because of Alex Padilla being nominated to the U.S. Senate to replace Vice President Kamala Harris, there was an acting Secretary of State until Shirley Weber, who was an assemblywoman down in San Diego, was recently confirmed by the legislature and sworn in as the new Secretary of State. But in that interval, there was an acting deputy, and that's who James Schwab, he stepped into the role.
And he sent some kind of dictate to the commission about keeping, treating LGBTQ communities as communities of interest.
Well, he sent a letter to the local redistricting commissions, because while the same time that this statewide group is working on the maps for the legislature and Congress, there are local redistricting commissions looking at redrawing boundaries for your county supervisors or your city council seats. And so he sent a letter in late January to all the major cities that have these bodies and strongly suggested that they also consider the LGBTQ community to be a community of interest that needs to be kept intact as they draw these lines and not split up so that it makes it harder for LGBTQ people to get elected to, you know, the city council, say, in Sacramento, or, you know, the county board of supervisors here in San Francisco, where, you know, for years now, we've only had one person on the San Francisco supervisors.
You mentioned before we started recording that there had been some, I think you called it friendly bickering in the past about how District 8 would be drawn, and there's some adjustments here and there over the years. And District 8 includes the Castro, so it's a heavily gay neighborhood. Can you tell us a little bit about that history?
Yeah, so I call it friendly bickering because the supervisors here, some of them wanted to be able to represent more of the LGBTQ community. So there was some conversations about carving out where the LGBTQ senior housing is, that Open House co-runs somewhat near the LGBTQ community center. They're like a block away. Well, they kind of straddle the border between two supervisor districts. And 10 years ago, there was some discussion about maybe recarving the district so that that senior housing was not in District 8, which has historically been considered the LGBT district. And then the argument was that it would maybe help to have two different supervisors being able to advocate for, you know, the community. But in the end, that didn't happen. But some other, you know, changes were made because there were some Latino communities that wanted to be included in District 9, which has been historically a Latino district because it covers, you know, the Mission District here in the city. And so, you know, there's those conversations that take place every 10 years as the local redistricting commissions start to work on their maps. So,
okay.
You know, we could see some discussion like that happen again this year, more so around, I think, some of the neighborhoods in south of Market and the Tenderloin, where we've seen most of the new population and new housing be built. So there's more people there. So that means those lines could end up being redrawn to deal with the increase of the population. Because you have to keep in mind, when these bodies, whether it's the statewide one or the local one, they need to have districts that are pretty much the same in population, right? That's what they're working towards.
Right.
And that's what makes it difficult, that sometimes communities do get carved up because there's just too many people and you need to even out the districts so that...
So that each supervisor is representing roughly the same number of people.
It's all proportional.
Right. Okay. Very good. You're listening to Out in the Bay, queer radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen here with Matthew Espejaco, assistant editor and politics columnist for the Bay Area Reporter. We've been speaking about redistricting, the remapping of California's legislative and U.S. congressional districts based on the state's population, as shown in last year's census. A citizens panel is holding hearings or revving up its work now about this and seeking input from Californians on how to draw those district lines. A couple more questions about this. In this week's article, you also note that San Francisco has not elected an LGBTQ person to the assembly since 2012 when Tom Amiano was elected to his last term in that chamber. Why do you think that's the case?
We just have a lot of candidates that want to run for higher office, and sometimes, you know, the gay candidate doesn't win.
Okay, so it wasn't a matter of, in that case, it wasn't a matter of districts being redrawn or anything like
no,
that.
No, we had two very strong candidates running against each other, and this is part of the problem when you lose these seats, right? If there's less seats for people to run for, then they're going to end up running against each other. And so in this instance, what happened is that in the 2014 election, we had David Campos, who was a city supervisor, openly gay man, and an immigrant who came here as a teenager with his family, Latino. And he was running against David Chu, who is, you know, an Asian American leader, also on the board of supervisors. They represented, you know, here in San Francisco, different sides of the Democratic Party. So David Chu was considered the moderate candidate. David Campos was considered the progressive, and unfortunately, it was the battle of the Davids, right? So one David won, and it just happened to be the non-gay candidate, and it caused an issue, actually, that December, because when David Chu got sworn in to the state assembly, because San Francisco now had nobody in the assembly from the LGBTQ community, he tried to apply to be a member of the legislative LGBTQ caucus. And they discussed it, and they ended up deciding that that caucus could only really be for LGBTQ state legislators, and so he wasn't allowed to join. But he certainly has carried several LGBTQ-focused bills in the past, and he's carrying one this year that would help transgender and non-conforming public higher education students ensure that their lived names are used on their academic records and diplomas.
Rather than their previous names called dead names
now. Exactly.
Right. Okay. Very good. Last thing I want to ask you about this is, how can people get involved and express their opinions or preferences in this redistricting process that's now underway? You mentioned earlier that you can draw your own map and submit it. How would someone do that?
So if you are so inclined to dive into demographic information and geography, you can go to the website drawmycacommunity.org, and that has everything you need to draw the map and submit it to the commission. And then the commission itself is launching a brand new website for their work this year, and that is at wedrawthelinesca.org.
Okay, so those two websites are drawmycacommunity.org and wedrawthelinesca.org, is that right? Okay, groovy. We'll also put that link on our site. You can find it at the bottom of the post about this week's show. So let's move on now to the effort to recall Governor Gavin Newsom. In an article earlier this month, you wrote that LGBTQ leaders are split about this recall effort, mostly along party lines. And your article included recent polling numbers showing the governor's approval rating had dropped substantially over the past few months. Let's talk about the dip in his approval rating first. What is it about Newsom's performance that people are dissatisfied with?
Well, I think it has everything to do with, you know, living a year with a health pandemic that has disrupted everyone's lives here in California and around the world, obviously. You know, the governor last year started out, he had, you know, strong approvals. People really hailed his handling of the situation. And then he made a stupid mistake in the eyes of a lot of people when he attended a friend's birthday party against the rules that he was asking people to abide by, and it happened to come right before the holidays. So I think that generated a lot of anger that here are all these people were canceling, spending Thanksgiving, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Christmas, New Year's with their loved ones and their friends. And then there was all the news attention on the fact that the governor had not abided by what he was asking everyone to do. So I think that just kind of gave a lot of oomph behind the recall effort that was kind of nascent at the time, and it just snowballed from there. I think people initially, because after the Thanksgiving holiday, they instituted a statewide lockdown for almost all of December and part of January. That generated a lot of animosity once again towards the governor. And the people behind the recall efforts have really used that to their advantage.
Who are the people behind the recall effort?
Mainly Southern California Republicans, who see it as a chance to try to reclaim the governor's mansion, in a state where, on a normal ballot, they have very little chance of winning any statewide office, just because the registration between Democrats and independents skews so heavily against, how many registered Republican voters there are in California. But if you look at the polling, yes, people were upset with the governor and the handling of COVID and the fact that, almost all the public schools remain closed. But then when people were asked about the recall, there didn't seem to be as much support of getting rid of the governor. So a lot of political watchers are expecting that they're going to be able to get this recall on the ballot, but it won't be held until the fall. And as we've already seen, the governor and his supporters have really ramped up vaccination efforts in the state. You've seen, mayors up and down California attacking their school districts. Here in San Francisco, they're even suing the school district to try to get them to reopen. So I think, what's going on is trying to persuade public opinion to forget about last fall and winter and focus on the fact that things are moving forward now, and they now expect anyone in California who wants a vaccine to be able to get one by the end of July.
Now, let's hope so. Crossing our fingers. Newsom has a long tradition of supporting LGBTQ Californians. He challenged the status quo on same-sex marriage way back in 2004, performing scores of same-sex marriages that were later ruled invalid by the state Supreme Court when he was mayor of San Francisco. And then late last year, he appointed Martin Jenkins, a black gay man, to the state Supreme Court, the court's first out LGBTQ justice. What do you think the effect would be on queer Californians if Newsom were removed from office?
Well, it depends on who gets elected. For the first time in recent memory, we actually have a Republican candidate who's a moderate, the former mayor of San Diego, Mayor Faulkner. And he joined the Mayors for Same-Sex Marriage group after he got elected. He, worked rather well with his local LGBTQ community down there in San Diego. Though if you talk to, queer leaders down there, they don't feel that that means he should be elected governor. But it does mean that we will have two, possibly major candidates that actually, support same-sex marriage, one being a Republican and one a Democrat for the first time that I've covered a gubernatorial race here in California. So that would be pretty significant and mark, quite a difference between Republicans here in California and the rest of their party in other states where the GOP lawmakers and state houses are running to pass, very transphobic and homophobic legislation this year. But Mayor Faulkner is not beloved by even Republicans. The other people behind the recall have called him a Democrat in Republicans' clothing. They don't think he should be the party standard bearer. There's already a Republican businessman, John Cox, who ran against Newsom last time, who's been, you know, very publicly opposing, you know, Mayor Faulkner. And so I think that plays well for Newsom, because even the people who want him out, they haven't coalesced around a candidate. So we'll have to see how it all plays out. The deadline for them to get the signatures they need to qualify the ballot is in mid-March.
Right. I think I read in your article March 17th, and they have to get 1.5 million valid signatures. What do you think the chances are that they'll pull that off?
Well, they've started to get a lot of money from donors, and they've hired professional signature gatherers who say that it's been pretty easy to get people to sign the paperwork. But, you know, as we've seen in the past, it's one thing to actually sign something to put it on the ballot. It's another to actually pass it once it makes it on the ballot. So,
yeah.
And for Newsom, he has the time on his hands, because, like I said, even if they qualify it in March, the recall election won't happen until the fall. So he has plenty of time to kind of change people's feelings about how the state is handling the pandemic.
Okay, very good. Before we close out, any other stories or news developments that you're tracking now that we should be aware of?
We continue to see more LGBTQ-related bills be filed ahead of the deadline to do so. The first deadline is actually coming up this month, but a lot of times what happens is, you know, the state lawmakers will just kind of file a placeholder bill, so there's time to change that and gut and amend it with another policy you want to push. So I think just keep we're trying to keep track of that, and as I said, we're following what's going on with the lawsuits against the school district here in San Francisco. It's really upset a lot of people, with the schools still being closed, the push to rename 44 school sites by April. There's a lot of anger right now out there. So anything's possible, right?
And when does the legislature really ramp up? Next month?
Well, they're already starting. They're focusing first on kind of the COVID issues and the health issues between now and March. And then what I keep being told by lawmakers and LGBTQ advocates is that the committees will start taking up some of these other bills probably the end of March, early April. And then they have until, you know, the summer to pass the bills and get them to the governor. So, you know, it'll be a process.
Very good. Hey, thank you so much. You've been hearing Out on the Bay, Queer Radio from San Francisco. My guest today was Matthew Esposito, assistant editor and politics columnist for the Bay Area Reporter, Northern California's largest circulation LGBTQ newspaper and online news service. Thank you, Matthew.
Thank you, Eric.
You can learn more about California's redistricting process and how to voice your opinions on it by reading Matthew's article in this week's BAR, either by visiting the Bay Area Reporter website at ebar.com, or pick up a copy of the print edition at a bookstore or newsstand or LGBTQ community center near you. We'll also have a link to Matthew's article about redistricting and about the governor's recall on our site, outinthebay.org, at the bottom of the post about this week's show. Under our partnership with the Bay Area Reporter, we have a short article on the BAR's website every Friday with a link to our feature program for the week. Check it out at ebar.com. That's ebar.com. And once a month, Matthew or another BAR journalist joins us on Out on the Bay to fill us in on important stories in the queer community. We'll have those links on our website, outonthebay.org, where you can also hear this show again if you missed the beginning, hear past shows, and share them with friends. You can also sign up for our occasional email newsletter. Please do, so you won't miss an episode, and subscribe to our podcast. Growing numbers could help us secure funding. And of course, we're always open to donations, so just hit the donate button on our website. Once again, it's outinthebay.org. I'm Eric Jansen. Thank you for listening, and thanks for joining us out in the Bay.